Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three people review science fiction or fantasy novels.
We make a good attempt.
We try. Today we are reviewing Six Wakes by Merle Lafferty. Who chose this one?
I did.
Barry, could you give me a reading from the back of the book, please?
Sure. A space adventure set on a lone ship where the clones of a murdered crew must find their murderer before they kill again. It was not common to awaken in a cloning vat streaked with drying blood. At least Maria Arena had never experienced it. She had no memory of how she died. That was also new. Before, when she had awakened as a new clone, her first memory was of how she died. Maria's vat was in front of six vats, each one holding the clone of a crew member of the starship Dormir, each clone waiting for its previous incarnation to die so it could awaken. And Maria wasn't the only one to die recently.
All right. Well, let's see. First of all, I'd like to say that when you said it was not common to awaken in a cloning vat streaked with drying blood, I started thinking about, it's not unusual to awaken in a cloning vat streaked with drying blood.
It's like Tuesday.
That which great Vegas number.
Which apparently it was like Tuesday in our Earth of the future.
It's cloning Tuesday.
Yes. It's 3 p.m. It's time for our daily recloning session.
Absolutely. So, Kevin, what did you think of this one?
Overall, it was amusing.
Okay. Barry, how about you?
That was deep.
Yeah.
It was totally deep.
I liked it. It was a good murder mystery whodunit in space.
Excellent.
I give it a positive review.
You laughed, you cried. It was better than Cats.
I never saw Cats. I've seen a cat in my neighborhood, but...
I mean, it's not better than our friend's cat, Zeppo.
No.
Because he's an awesome cat.
Zeppo is like probably the most awesome cat I've ever met.
Right. This is now the Zeppo cast.
Yes. Where I'm currently holding up a picture of Zeppo right now.
You're crushing my fur.
Oh, no. Zeppo, don't do that.
Great. So anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed this one as well. I liked how it took seriously a lot of basic concepts about what it would be like if every time you died, you were recloned. They use a lot of Star Trek-like technology in there, and it sort of examines some of the holes that are sometimes in our thinking about this is how you could use a replicator, and this is the difference between, say, a replicator and a cloning vat, that sort of thing.
Right.
But anyway, I thought that also she did a good job with taking some fairly stock types of characters and giving them a little extra life by gradually fleshing out their backstories.
I believe everybody got a chapter or a wake.
Yeah, it's sort of a little bit like, you know, Lost or something like that, where they start with where people are now and flash back. And so
right.
Most of Merle Lafferty's stuff that I've read in the past has been more sort of Neil Gaiman-y, sort of fantasy-oriented or almost religiously-oriented. And this is the first hard science fiction that I've read of hers, and I thought she did a good job. All right. So, yes, I believe it is time for us to reawaken in the clone vat. That is the discussion section. So we shall return, for we are Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
And welcome back to our discussion section for Six Wakes by Merle Lafferty. So, yes, one of the major points of this book was cloning.
And Yadokaris.
Would you mind describing what Yadokaris are?
Yadokaris appear to be programmed in sort of like trapdoors, I think, to help explain things in the future when you ran across specific situations. Or, you know, even could you also be used to, you know, invoke certain actions in a person.
It was like a trigger, right?
Yeah,
it was like a trigger. Or another personality kind of buried inside you sometimes.
That was another usage of them. They had like basically buried another personality inside somebody's...
Like a sleeper agent.
Yes. Right. And then they go on their murder spree.
Exactly. Just like, you know, one of us is the real person and the other two are Yadokaris that we, you know, have the ability to interact with.
I'm the real Slim Shady.
Yeah, you keep believing that.
I'm dreaming both of you in the outer darkness.
Well, okay.
You're like Yog-Sothoth on the future rim of the universal plane.
Yes. So one of the aspects of cloning technology is since the memories are copied into the clone, then that gave all kinds of opportunities for memory editing and personality editing. So,
and genetic editing.
And genetic editing. So one of our characters, first mate Maria Arana, was a hacker who was mostly involved with editing memory constructs, you know, people's personalities after they've been cloned. And she had quite a number of times been murdered herself and her body shipped back.
Yes, forced into doing specific work and then having her body killed off, but her most previous mind map re-implanted on her so she didn't remember.
Right. So that was sort of an interesting form of dramatic irony where we're flashing back to something that happened in her past, but only we, the readers, know about. She sort of can speculate a little bit about it because she was able to create one of these hidden portions of her own mind.
The Yadokari.
The Yadokari. She was able to create her own Yadokari, which was kind of an AI. And I kind of wished we'd seen a little bit more of that particular one. It was actually like a horror character that she'd kind of bonded with, if I remember correctly. Oh.
Yeah, like some movie she'd seen when she was really young. It was like the headmistress of some school or something.
Yeah, right. And so she was able to smuggle some memories back of what had been done to her in these previous sessions where she'd been kidnapped and forced to work on these terrible projects. And one of the problems is they know that she breaks under torture. So just every once in a while she is kidnapped and threatened with torture until she does something terrible.
Do this bad thing you don't want to do. But it's okay, you know, we'll kill you and then you get to get rebooted before we kidnapped you, so everything's fine. And she was supposed to be like one of the, you know, the best programmers or hackers or whatever of the era.
Right. And at first I was sort of thinking that this was kind of a Charles Dickens novel where we have a vast space travel civilization and it just turns out that all of them have been interacting with each other the whole time and don't really know about it.
That sounds like an awesome Doctor Who episode.
That's pretty much all of Doctor Who right there. But it turns out that it's somewhat deliberate that this is kind of the, hey, let's get rid of all of my enemies by putting them all on the same spaceship. By the big bad Sally Mignon, or actually Salome, as they...
Sally Meat Puppet, what was it?
Well, her first name is actually Salome.
Okay.
That's why it's actually spelled S-A-L-L-I-E.
Oh, okay.
Not Sally Mae, the lender?
No, Freddie Mac wouldn't. Doesn't appear either.
Oh. What book did I read?
Apparently a treatise on economics.
I think it was an awesome Trillionaire's Revenge.
Right. It was like the long game of just like, I'm not even going to be aware that they're, you know, not having a good time, but I know they probably aren't. So it's worth it.
Right. Barry originally texted out, this book is Trillionaire's Revenge. I was thinking, well, man, he must really have hated this book then. If he thinks some sort of trillionaire, you know, specifically commissioned Merle Lafferty to write this as revenge on him.
And then somehow tricked me into selecting the book, which is...
I suppose it's, you know, time for us to fess up. There is no podcast.
This whole thing, you know, we all got hired on together.
The internet. It's all been a big hoax.
Oh, man.
You're a clone.
Wake up. Wake up, Barry.
No.
You're going to reboot and do it all over again.
Rosebud. Where's Zeppo? I need a comfort cat.
Fur.
Yes. But there were other interesting aspects about cloning that Merle Lafferty explored. People dying at parties just became sort of a thing.
It's like, not a party till at least three people get killed.
Exactly. Yeah,
like assassinated or just, I don't remember, bad things happen.
Right, you know.
Whoops.
A corporate assassin is going to murder somebody later at a party and they have a meeting first and, you know, close a deal, but I still have to kill you at this party.
Right. This kind of reminded me a bit of the book that could never be recorded, our podcast could never be recorded about, which was The Dispatcher.
Do not say its name, lest it curse us again. Yes. We tried several times to record a review of...
that book.
Yes, the Scottish book.
Yes.
Thanks, Scotty.
Yes, John Scalzi.
She can't take much more, Captain.
Of John Scalzi's The Dispatcher, and every time it went glitchy. And so I've developed a
hardware. Yes, bug in the universe. Thank you.
I've become a little bit superstitious about mentions of it.
But we did review it.
Yes, we did twice.
Yes.
All right. So what are the clone codicils?
That was the framework of laws that they had set up on Earth as cloning became out of control. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, I think it's, yes, one of the other characters plus Sally were sort of instrumental in setting up what the clone codicils were, which was you can't have more than, you know, one version of you running around at a time. And it's sort of like, you know, Asimov's three laws of robotics, right? It's the laws of clones.
Right.
Right. Otherwise, you could just have the entire ship with just different versions of the captain.
You guys haven't figured out there's actually five of me.
Well, I only see you one at a time.
He hasn't figured out that we're all him.
Oh, man, that's even more terrifying.
Yeah. So when I first started reading, I thought that we had a lot of, you know, very basic stock characters. We had the hacker, the paranoid captain, the ninja assassin, and they all kind of were those stock characters. But I think that Merle Lafferty did a good job of sort of going back and giving them some texture. For example, the wacky Asian guy, which I'm just saying it as a trope.
He always has to be the pilot.
Exactly. It turns out that, yes, he's also a stealth assassin who didn't know about his assassin personas for a long time.
Yeah, he actually ended up being the straight clone.
He was like the clone that wasn't off killing people, too. Like,
right, he provided the alibi for everybody else.
For like the eight other ones. And then, so this was like kind of like one of those where this case doesn't really fit very well into the clone codicils, where they find out that he has all these other clones, which is highly illegal, and that they've been killing people.
Right, but he's innocent.
And he's innocent. He's the first.
I've just been cutting hair and eating ramen.
He's what he thinks is the first or the second clone or something like that. He remembers all this stuff, and then later on he realizes that all these things he thought were bad dreams was like some of his earlier things that were all like meshed together into one. And
right.
So he's not having a good time. So the laws basically say, well, we have to take mind maps of all the crazy killer clones and you. Merge them together because, you know, you're all part of the same person legally, you know, kill you and make you a new clone with all of those memories together. And doesn't work, come out very well out of that.
Right.
Well, originally it was in the codicils, it's always the oldest clone is the one that survives, but because there were so many of them, right? They didn't really know what to do. And so this is sort of like a special case, it seemed like.
Well,
right.
Wasn't it the youngest clone or the newest clone, whatever?
Yeah. So I think we all had sort of like a disagreement on how to refer to the most recent mind map or the oldest clone or the youngest clone. Or
I think we had a disagreement with Merle Lafferty because she referred to somebody as the oldest clone. And it's just like, well, the oldest clone would be the clone that was
I think it was the oldest made. Mind map.
Right.
And it's like, shouldn't it be the most recent mind map?
Right.
And
but or at least even the eldest mind map.
The most current mind map.
Right, exactly. Yes.
But I guess if at some point if you create, you know, N clones with the same mind map, right, and then they all sort of diverge from there.
Right. That was my only real problem with the book is I got kind of caught up in a little like, you know, grammar nitpicks kind of like that, where I'm like, the oldest clone is different from the oldest mind map. Yes.
This is because we are us.
Yes. I'm like, and so it's not, you know, the book's not a bad book. You know, just like, you know, being me, I'm just like, but that's not 100% accurate. You know, the semantics is slightly different here and it should be this.
So one thing that I'm not entirely sure if it's a criticism or not, but the opening sequence where people are all sort of waking up on a spaceship and don't remember how they got there, that's become sort of a weirdly popular trope in many different kinds of fiction now. I've seen that in at least one movie. Let's see, Pandorica, I think. There was an entire TV series which started out with a bunch of people being awakened from hibernation without realizing how they got there, and they're all in a spaceship.
It's also an annoying game trope.
Well, it is a common game trope, yes.
Yes. It makes a lot of sense for games because the character and the player are kind of in the same position. They're sort of discovering their environment and what's going on around them.
It's like a good game of Zork.
Bell, book, and candle.
X, Y, Z, Z, Y. But I thought that she took that and ran with it and did some interesting things with it. So another thing we wanted to discuss was being able to clone means not leaving crap to your family since you don't die.
It also changed the economy of the planet a bit.
Right. Clones are not allowed to have children. That's like, so that's a couple of the other things with the cloning laws was basically it's illegal to make genetic modifications, even if you have some kind of genetic disease, you know, basically people got too freaked out by it. And so it's illegal to like say, oh, you have multiple sclerosis or some other genetic thing. It's like, oh, too bad. I guess you'll just have to die every lifetime if you want to be a clone.
It's the price of cloning.
Yeah. So, of course, that made a lot of people like, okay, throwing out the baby with the bathwater kind of thing.
Literally.
Yes.
They have this whole concept of, you know, bathtub jobs.
Well, that was like before the codicils came out. They had problems where this was why they made them. Basically, you know, one of the big reasons was like parents would have some baby and they'd be like, oh, I wanted a boy, not a girl. Or, you know, this
I wanted blue eyes, not brown eyes.
Yeah, or whatever it was. And it's just like, and they made it unclear as to how old the child was, if they were babies or whether they waited until they were older too. But basically they'd have someone come along, let's take a mind map, let's, you know, clone you, fix those like pesky little things we don't like. It's sort of like post eugenics, you know.
Right.
Then it's like, we'll clone a new one, put the mind map, and then we just, you know, get rid of the pesky original, which isn't quite what we wanted. Like,
or as Sally Minion did at one point, oh, and make him forgive me for doing this without his consent.
That's right.
Oh,
the,
right,
the husband. Yeah.
Right. And she's like, yeah, do that. And she's like, wait, are you serious? Because I could probably. Because I'm
and make him
good.
Stop cheating on me.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
make him incredibly
like,
loyal.
Yep. I'll do it. Like, yeah. So that's another thing is you can't mess with people's mind maps like that. And of course, that's all the stuff that Maria did a lot, you know.
Hey, it's just like, you know, what is it, Crake and editing the Crakers.
Oh, yeah. We've been doing a lot of genetically editing books lately.
That one's at least beforehand, right? Although I guess he did have several attempts at it.
Well, you can't remove all humor.
It's like it kind of makes them, you know, kind of
psychotic.
I think it was more like vegetables, but yeah.
Just like us.
Yeah. I am blue.
Well, don't tell us about it. Yeah, so another interesting trope was something that I don't think I've seen a lot of, which is that they discover that their artificial intelligence Ian was originally a human that basically got brain uploaded. That one was a little bit tricky for me because
it was also against his will.
Yes, against his will.
And he was modified to not remember it.
Right, and it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, AI programming that would be indistinguishable from a brain upload. But then again, I don't live in a post-cloning future. So right. Maybe my idea of what's plausible and what isn't doesn't make sense.
It's just a big data file.
Your dreams just aren't big enough.
Like, we don't want to look at that. Yeah.
We'll fix that in the next revision.
They did talk a lot about, well, and then just manipulate the code, you know, for the AI to do this or that. And, you know, of course, the programmer part of me is like, well, that seems implausible, but okay, I guess I'll let it slide. Well,
I kept imagining like corporations of the future, you know, basically buying people and then, you know, editing their brain maps to make them more subservient and more, you know, more efficient. And
seems very Max Headroom.
Yes, it does.
But that does, you know, explain why they were talking about this as the most advanced AI possible. They just took this basically Hannibal Lecter psychotic, you know, manipulator type and made him a little bit more biddable and put him in the computer.
And they made him sound a lot more cheerful than Hannibal.
Well, that's true.
Right. And so basically on the ship, it turns out by the end that it's, yes, like we mentioned that, you know, Sally had decided take all my enemies, you know, make them pay to go on the ship to another planet, take all my other enemies who are, you know, criminals and sort of put them on board and they'll all suffer together. Yay. And probably one of them will snap and kill all the other ones. And
and then it worked.
And I'll get my awesome revenge.
Until they clone themselves.
Big example of the usual suspect.
With the pig cloner.
Ah, yes. So that was something where I thought that it got a little bit too telegraphed. I think we all guessed what was going to happen. They have this new amazing food machine and we're all sort of like, so why don't they just use that as the clone?
Which had been on board for like 25 years before.
It was just in a crate.
The other one was modified to only print hemlock.
Right.
Yeah. Some of that stuff I'm like, that's unlikely that they wouldn't have, especially by then, a lot of backups or, you know, we have ROM, so you can't overwrite the original source code or whatever it is.
Like, this is why you don't want engineers reading your science fiction.
Right.
This is why I have a basement full of backups.
That was pretty funny that she just had
a... you or us?
You'd be surprised.
I really wouldn't be.
There were a lot of people did have their own personal backups.
I think one of the things that I think we were all sort of going nuts on was they all wake up and the food machine is offline and there's no food. And it's just
and clones are hungry because they're empty.
Right. And it's just like, okay, so wouldn't you have emergency biscuits? I mean,
not after 25 years.
Yeah, I know. I was like, come on, you have to have some kind of like just, you know, flour paste somewhere or something. Right. Like,
okay, you know, we've got the
printer. But we have
print out the emergency ration.
We have your cloning vat actually also prints out Soylent.
I mean, I guess
it's really the same thing.
I guess
can you just eat that stuff directly with a spoon? It's life or whatever they called it. Glows in the dark.
It's just unanimated matter.
But of course, there's plenty of alcohol that everyone's drinking.
Well, yes. I think that probably one of the defenses would be if the food machine was just so reliable that they never, ever break down, in which case, why bring a spare? But
right. It's just one of those things that you're like, seriously, they wouldn't have like a week's worth of, you know, ration bars somewhere.
Yes.
Or something.
One of the other things that was sort of interesting was there was a moment where somebody demanded that the doctor give someone CPR. And it was pointed out, well, CPR won't work. We're in low gravity.
Oh, yeah.
And so I...
Yeah, I was like, seriously? You're serious that...
And I thought it was sort of a good kind of literary moment about, you know, they are just so used to cloning, solving all their problems that they haven't thought about the basics, like how to do CPR. But I asked my wife, who is a doctor, about this, and she said, well, you can... do CPR in low gravity.
You just give him a big hug?
More or less. She had to do CPR for somebody that was throwing up at the time, so she had to roll them on their side and then continue doing chest compressions. And so you actually just have to put your knees on one side and push down on the other side.
I see. Well, yeah, because I was like, wait, that could be true, but it doesn't sound... like it's possibly true. And then someone said, you know, oh, low gravity, they would just push themselves off. I'm like, yeah, because apparently they haven't invented straps yet.
Yeah. We're actually just wear giant Velcro suits and they put you on the wall. And
exactly.
We've got a bunch of, you know, ways of nitpicking this. But right, I guess part of the problem was, you know, Shu didn't really think about that because she's not really trained for emergency medicine. Because
why bother? Well, right. They did say later on that like,
you mean the character?
Yes.
The character.
Yes.
Yeah. They're like, isn't it weird that like we can like copy someone's brain, upload into another, you know, genetic copy that's been grown, but we can't actually like fix this brain trauma in an actual person.
Right.
Because it's like, well, why would you do that? Just clone them, you know? Right.
Well, I thought it was also interesting that they sort of had like this perfect recycling system, mm-hmm. right? They could basically dump an old body into the recycler and then create another, you know, potentially creating us another clone from the same material you just dumped in.
Right.
You know, modulo some
bits or stick it in the food printer.
Yeah. It's all fungible.
Right. Well, I mean, it's basically, you know, there's probably like huge matter tubes where just slurry is being pushed through on a regular basis.
I actually thought it was more like carbon bricks, right? You just basically take a brick off the wall and, you know, put it into the machine and.
Yeah. I assume that it broke it down into molecules or something, but yeah, it did feel. Like you said, Zork, it kind of did feel like it could be an adventure game where, you know, that's kind of where my brain goes, where it's like, you know, okay, how do you solve this problem where like, you know, the cloning thing's broken. And then the second, like they pull out the big, you know, food printer, it's like, oh, well, of course you modify this to do it. You know,
and then the instructions are all in Japanese.
The food printer of Fraboz.
at least it's not a sentient toaster.
Toast.
So you're a waffle man.
You want some toast, Barry?
I'd like some Kodiak cakes.
Mmm.
All right. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about?
I will sort this particular regular question into, you know, would you be a clone or not be a clone?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be a clone.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we're all, oh, duh.
We're all pro-clone.
Do it right now. My back aches and I'm overweight.
Yes. I could be 20 again in good shape.
Please, please put me into a thin clone. Thank you. I'm going to get my doctor off my ass.
And of course, the other thing was there tea?
And there was actually quite a bit of tea, very lovingly described. So right.
There was win.
And also it was the only form of like minor nutrition that they had when all of the rest of the stuff. Also, she may have introduced me to a new tea technique because she talks about freshening up the tea by heating it on a hot plate or something like that. And I had never heard of that before.
Reheating tea?
Yeah.
Well, like dry heating
the tea. So I thought that was really interesting.
Is that like toast retoasting?
Yeah, pretty much. I had never heard of people doing that before, but
so you'll have to research it now.
Now it could be a whole new episode of the podcast I don't much do anymore.
Yeah, so yeah, there were a lot, and they actually had loose leaf, you know, green teas or whatever it was, and
yep. So
but no meat tea.
So you know that outweighs any of the nitpicking.
Yeah, all the nitpicking swept aside by appropriate use of tea.
So I think one of the other things I think we didn't talk about was the ability to influence political decisions using clones and the mind hacking of mind maps and things like that. Because that was actually part of the clone codicils was they ended up kidnapping a influential religious leader who was, you know, anti-clone.
Right.
And basically hacking his brain, you know, repeatedly and killing him repeatedly and recloning him. To make him essentially believe that, you know, cloning was a good thing.
And he still wound up really, really hating clones in the long run.
Yeah, right? He said, I don't believe that it's like, I don't remember what it was. Like some part of it, like he wasn't believing anymore. Like it wasn't against God or something. Or
something about his soul.
Basically what he said was he didn't necessarily believe that you didn't have a soul when you were cloned. But if you were mind hacked, that definitely removed your soul. And he was speaking as somebody who had been mind hacked and was pissed off about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was sort of like an interesting thing that I hadn't considered before with clones.
Oh yeah. Once you can hack people's minds, then that puts a whole lot of new wrinkles onto democracy.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
I hope you win the Hugo.
Why, thank you.
Not you. Well, I hope you win, because then by extension, I win too.
Yes, but we haven't been nominated, so
unfortunately,
it would be a bit of a trick.
Can't we do some mind hacking?
Yes, that's why I'm going to Finland.
Yes, Murr's podcast is up for a Hugo.
Exactly.
Is a Hugo nominated?
Mm-hmm. Ditch Diggers.
Yes.
And Murr Lafferty is actually a pioneer in podcasting. She started out in 2004, possibly earlier than that. And she's often sort of skipped over when people talk about, oh, well, podcasting really started with Serial or something like that. She was one of the original people talking about fiction and science fiction online. So she deserves props for that. All right. So, I think that I don't have a clever ending. Anyway, until next time.
We are clone, clone, clone.
Yes. We are sci-fi.
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 Execute Order 66.